You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey, Nick.
Oh, shit.
I'd beat you to it this time. You know, you're always greeting me first, and then I have to respond, and I thought I'd change it up. Are you surprised?
I'm super surprised, dude. I'm super surprised. I'm super thankful. It's such a lovely day. And we'll get into that a little later. But, it's a new day. It's a new day. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. Why not have you be the first to speak?
Yeah. We can do whatever we want in this new world. Joseph R. Biden has brought us possibility.
What other things do you want to do now that Joseph R. Biden is president? What's on your mind?
I've always wanted to learn how to scuba dive.
Yeah.
So now that Joseph R. Biden is the president, I may try. But I'll be honest with you. I've already tried scuba diving, but I have a weird inner ear problem that if I get too deep, if the pressure gets too intense, I get vertigo, so it's unsafe, and they couldn't actually license me. So I went through the whole process of getting certified to be a scuba diver, and I couldn't do it. So, but now that Joseph R. Biden is the president, I may give it another shot, and maybe my ears will work with me.
I mean, that's great. I was more just talking about like getting some ice cream or some shit, but good for you,
America.
Little justice. Little justice, little justice.
Ah, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the first Little Justice episode recorded in the new presidency of Joseph Robinette Biden.
Welcome, Mr.
Kamala
Biden.
Harris. Welcome, Mr. Biden.
So nice,
welcome,
so nice to have you all here.
It's so nice to be with you in this country that is still the same, just has a better paint job on it today. So
paint job is an astute metaphor.
It is. But can I tell you, I will say this. It was so, you know, I've obviously you watched the inauguration. You watched
parts of it, yeah. The important parts.
The important parts. You watched J-Lo, you watched Lady Gaga, you watched the speech. I gotta say, definitely teared up. When Kamala was getting sworn in, that was a big old moment.
That's a big moment.
It's a big moment. And then Biden's speech, mwah, chef's kiss. What do you feel about that?
I mean, obviously, but he's been on point, you know, understanding that he's not writing these things. He's got a team of people who know exactly what he needs to sound like. Yes. I think they've done a really good job about making sure the message is consistently unifying.
Yes.
I was worried when Biden became the front runner and through this whole process that there would be sort of an aura of backsliding, right? Back into politics as usual. And I think that they have recognized that. And while I assume there will be a lot of politics as usual, I also think that there's a lot more Bernie in the Democratic Party right now than there would have been otherwise had, you know, the whole Trump thing never have happened. So.
Oh no, Bernie is all over this, and it's interesting too because he is, you know, I feel Biden is coming at this with such a, it really is the decency president. Like that's what it feels
right.
Like. I'm not trying to, you know, coin a phrase before it becomes a hot thing, but I did, so you're welcome, news media. But he it just feels decent. Everything he's saying is coming from a place of decency. He told the White House staff today when in his speech to them that he would fire them if they treated anyone with disrespect, that it was like automatic. And like, part of that is for show. It's for us. He knows we're watching, but it's also just a nice thing to hear. Like we're coming back to transparency and decency, you know, and still some, I don't know about you. I still have complicated feelings, about this, about everything that's happened in the past 2 weeks, but this was just it was a nice day to just be like, oh my God. Okay.
It's amazing. It's amazing how much normal can feel special, you know, just by doing things the way they should be done without too much weirdness and too much fanfare. It feels good. It feels really good.
It
which
feels
is not a feeling that we're used to as a country
at all. And it really is a special thing. I do feel, I don't know. I feel lifted. Like I'd really, you know, today we did Chaos Twins and we're done, you know, recording Little Justice this inauguration day. And it does feel like, oh yeah, let's get back to it. Let's get back to it. He signed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, yeah, completely. And I think there hasn't been as much, like for the past 2 weeks, there was so much, just like negative energy. Everyone was assuming that this week was going to be a crazy thing, right? That there were going to be mobs in the street in every capital in the country, that there was going to be violence, that there was going to be this and that. More what I'm seeing is a lot of people online recognizing that Trump is going to abandon them, that he has abandoned them. It's the people really fighting for him were under the assumption that his term would not end, that even if Biden took the presidency, there would be a big fight that Trump would be at the head of, and it would go on. And Trump's out. Like, he made all his money off the pardoning. He like charged, basically sold pardons, has made a ton of money off campaign financing. And I would be surprised if he felt the need to get back, especially, you know, the way that he's left now, feeling like a loser.
Well,
why would he come back?
It's interesting, right? Because I think that, you know, I never count him out of anything at this fucking point. I'm just like, you are a little snake.
Oh, we're so used to it. It's exactly. Like muscle memory.
It's just like, yeah, I'm not going to be surprised. I'm just not going to be surprised by anything. But what I will say is if this impeachment trial goes through and they're able to stop him from doing that, I think that's great. I think there's always the chance that one of his kids runs. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's inevitability that one of his kids runs for something. So that is something we got to keep our eye out for. And I think that's what I appreciated the most about Biden's speech and all the speeches today were speeches that were like, hey, we're here, but like now there's work to do. Like we have issues. We have a lot of issues that we need to reconcile with. And Trumpism is not gone, right? Those people that did this still exist. It's not like they're just blinked out of existence because Biden won, you know? And I think that is a huge thing to remember as we go forward in these next couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
Like, you know,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, my perspective on it, and again, maybe it's a little bit naive or hopeful, mm-hmm. is that Trumpism really only exists in the kinetic energy of the present moment, right? Like as like a side culture, it has no power. It's only because Trump was in the presidency and saying all and blowing up the norms. Literally and figuratively, that's what gave it power. And that's what people, because the people behind it are sucked into these social media bubbles, right? It's people getting fed all this fake news and all this and that. Trump himself, like without the daily reaffirmation mm-hmm. of what they're for, I really don't think it holds nearly enough power to sustain for 4 years.
Well, but
maybe it'll come back in a new form. I think you know that dark side is still there, but I don't think Trump himself is the thing to worry about.
Now
we've been made very aware of the white supremacy. To have the president-elect get up and on being sworn in talk about white supremacy is a crazy thing.
It's a huge thing. It's a big thing, and we should definitely not take that for granted. I will say, however, I think that, you know, what's sad is, right, you're talking about a thing that has always been there. And we are calling it Trumpism, but it has been with us since the dawn of the country. In fact, you know, there's that, you know, we had a Diane Morales on our show for Chaos Wednesday, who is the one of the candidates for mayor of New York City. And she said something that was so astute. She was talking about the idea, her and Sasha were talking about the idea that, like, you know, we have to get away from the education that tells us that the system isn't working and mm-hmm. to the education that says the system is actually working exactly as it was designed to work. And that's the issue, right? Is that this system was built for white men in 1776 and has not been sufficiently updated since. And now
completely.
we're just we are trying to open the iris. So I think to remember that Trumpism is baked into the very fabric of this nation, and we just have to keep our eye on it and reckon with it. And I think it sounds like we are starting to do that work, and I'm very excited to continue. But you know, bring us back to the purpose of this thing, which is, as always, to talk. Guys, we are so sorry. You know, we realize that, like, you know, we just talk about this, the world, shit.
It's what there is to talk about, and we find a way to tie it into what we're actually here for.
You know,
this one especially. I mean, I think we've started choosing topics just based on how we feel or what's going on. It's a nice flow because it gives us an excuse to talk about politics.
I think. You know, and stuff. But this is definitely, we wanted to choose for this first Biden Harris episode, choose a topic that went with that. So this is, you know, we're calling this the first day on the job movie. Is that what we call
the job?
It?
The first day, yeah, on the new job, first day on the job. I think it's open to interpretation, as most of our stuff is.
Yeah.
How did you look at it?
You know, it's interesting because I was thinking about, you know, as always, there's the two ways to take it. There's one, a movie that is literally about somebody's first experience with a job,
right?
Which is, I think, you know, a very cool idea. There's also that idea of, you know, a movie that could inspire you, or a piece that could inspire you on your time.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean? Like, what's a movie that you would watch on your first new day of a new job?
Hopefully, if you're at the if you're on your first day of a new job, you're not watching a movie. You're
hopefully your new
job that you're there for.
Yeah, hopefully
that's the hope. Anyway, unless you're a film critic, in which case. Best of both worlds.
And I think that for me, I tried to find something that was like a little bit in the middle. Mm-hmm. I mean, like a movie that to me would inspire me, both as somebody who is coming into a new job, like I would watch it maybe the night before and get pumped mm-hmm. up and be like, okay. And as somebody, coming into, or somebody, you know, a movie that is about a new job.
Right.
You know, I think both are viable options.
Yeah.
You know, and
I think so. I mean, my approach too, it was similar, but I took the job part into consideration too, in terms of like what a job is, right? Like why we start a new job. So not just like a new job, someone starting one. I wouldn't call my choice inspirational at all. Except to a very specific type of person.
Interesting.
But it is about someone starting a new job, but it's also about why, who are, like, what does it take to do a job, right? Like what is the mindset and the ethos and the drive behind working in a way, like, and what is expected of somebody moving into a job, what is, you know, what are the limits to it? Like, how hard should you push? How far can you go? You know, what kind of person do you need to be? Do you need to change? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've spent my entire career freelancing, and I mean, more or less, so have you, right? Bouncing from thing to thing, right?
Yes.
Moving into a new environment, giving it what you've got, moving on to the next thing. So you and I collectively have had dozens and dozens and dozens of new jobs.
Dozens, 100%, 100%, and that's kind of, I think that's the artist's life, right? You know, that's kind of what we do. We create these little families, and mm-hmm. we do what we got to do with them, and then we move forward. So that's part of it. That's part of it. Now, did you find when you were so this movie you say is not inspiring at all?
To me, it would be inspiring, but I'm a very specific type of person.
I'm, you know, disturbed. I'm very
exactly
worried.
Well, exactly. No, you know, it's I don't think a movie needs to be like a movie about a new job you figure is going to be inspiring in the sense that it's some, you know, what the movie's going to be before you start, right? Someone comes in and they struggle and then they finally come out the other end better than they came in, right? They understand something, right? Like Devil Wears Prada, kind of like, I'm having trouble this whole time, but at the end I have this growth that allows me to be me more presently and do my job better. And, you know, there's a million and one movies like that. My film does that in the weirdest possible way. And we'll talk about it, but it's,
you want to dive in? I mean, let's dive in. I'm very interested.
Yeah, we can. It's a little early to do the dive, but we can do it. Well,
let's do the dive. I want
to
know.
Let's dive right in, because I have wanted to talk about this one for a while, and I'm glad that I finally got a good excuse. And as I watched it, this is my third time seeing it.
Okay.
In the guise of new job, and thinking about new job movies specifically, right? Like the tenor of what these movies should feel like, the triumphant moments and the despairing moments and the where you are at the end and all of that. It actually fits it very perfectly, but wrapped in a completely different package.
Okay.
So we open on shots of Los Angeles. You're going to get this. Shots of Los Angeles. Nighttime. Basically, the whole movie takes place at night, except for a few instances. Full moon over LA, the observatory, desert, city, very kind of barren. Even when we're in the downtown Beverly Hills, it's a little wildernessy. And then we cut in, we're somewhere along the canal in the arts district, something like that, on a work site, and there's a guy clipping at a fence, clipping away at fencing, stealing it, right? Middle of nowhere, no one's around. Kind of a weird guy, greasy long hair. Clip, clip, clip. Car pulls up. Private security officer gets out. "Excuse me, sir, who are you? What are you doing here?"
"I'm lost."
Guy turns around. He's got a creepy ass smile on his face. In the headlights of this truck, he has a creepy ass look in his eye, big smile.
"Excuse me, sir."
He's put the clippers away. He starts talking to the guy. "I didn't know I wasn't allowed in here. I thought this was a detour." "Okay, buddy, let's see some identification. What's that outfit?" "Oh, you're a security. Oh, private security. I tried to get one of those jobs." Yada, yada, yada. Gets closer and closer. Sees the guy has a nice watch on. "I'm so sorry," whatever. Wham. Knocks him out. Cut to the next shot. He's driving down the highway. He's got all the fence. He's gone through and continued to clip all the fence off, and now it's in his car. And he's wearing the guy's watch. The movie is Nightcrawler.
"Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. In fact, I made up my mind to find a career that I can learn and grow into. Who am I? I'm a hard worker. I set high goals, and I've been told that I'm persistent. Now, I'm not fooling myself, sir. Having been raised with the self-esteem movement so popular in schools, I used to expect my needs to be considered. But I know that today's work culture no longer caters to the job loyalty that could be promised to earlier generations. What I believe, sir, is that good things come to those who work their asses off, and that people such as yourself who reached the top of the mountain didn't just fall there. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?"
"No."
Oh, good Lord. I don't know why. That is so gross.
How could you not get that?
I'm not, because I wasn't even thinking that you would go. I was hoping it's Biden's administration.
It's Biden's administration.
And you go to like the most sociopathic movie.
This is not the Biden's administration movie. Okay. This is the new job. I'm stripping away all the other elements. I'm looking at the core of what we really want to figure
out. Damn idiot.
What is a movie about somebody starting a new job? This is the movie.
No, that is not the movie. Think about it.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know, Nightcrawler is a film by Dan Gilroy, starring Jake Gyllenhaal as a guy who starts working shooting crime scenes, right? He gets a police scanner and he's looking for any job he can get. Like I said, we found him, you know, stealing wire, trying to sell it to a guy. He tries to get hired by the guy who says he doesn't hire thieves, and you know, the main character, he's kind of kind of like respects him for it. Like, okay, yeah, that's a good way to run your business. He's like a very self-starter. He's always talking about something he read in a book, how his mindset in terms of business and growth, like psychotically, this man is psychotic.
Sure.
In his determination, right? He is everything about, he is Tim Ferriss or whoever, you know, amped up to the max, with zero of the success, right? It's all work ethic mindset and zero product. And he gets sucked into this thing, starting following accidents, crime scenes, shootings and things and going and trying to be the first one on scene to film it, to sell it to the news station and build his business that way. Over the course of the movie, he actually, because of his kind of like psychotic, sociopathic nature, he's able to really, you know, build this thing to what unfortunately it needs to be. And it becomes this huge conversation about media consumption and the news and productizing really bad stuff that really is happening to people. I got no pulse
here, but that's the lead. I want to break it up and do a wraparound from the scene. I want a walking stand-up, teaser at 5, repeat on the half, and I want the copy to start with a warning.
You're going
to
show this?
With a warning.
It's excessive.
We should have packages like this every day.
People are eating breakfast.
And they'll talk about it at work.
So here's again, I just want to point out to everybody listening that, you know, on the day of like president, the day of like our last day with like the most fascist, narcissistic, like truly tyrannical president that we have ever had outside of, you know, like maybe like an Andrew Jackson. Do you know what I mean? Like we have escaped the madness for now, but we've escaped it. And this motherfucker who I host the show with goes to like the darkest, most like truly like capitalism, you know, greed is good, Wolf of Wall Street movie, like on a bender.
I don't see it that way. I think this movie does, it's completely inverted in such a poetic way where it's not in support of this, right? Like how many movies have the main character, he's not an anti-hero. You never root for this guy. You hate this guy the whole time. You hate what he's doing. You're just kind of morbidly curious about seeing how far he'll go, which speaks to what the film is actually about. But like the actual character and the story is not trying to get you to support what's going on.
No, it's not. It's not trying to get you
support. It's just presenting it in a way. And again, like in terms of how they lay out the music, how the music comes in and out, how they portray him from his perspective, when he does something good, which is something bad, the music is triumphant, right?
Yes.
The shots are slow motion. The world is a good place. When he's angry, it's the opposite. And they follow, like if you really like structure it out scene by scene, they follow, it's pretty formulaic, but like I said, it's completely inverted and it's so interesting.
But here's what I would say. You cast an actor like Jake Gyllenhaal, who is, I truly believe he is one of the most talented people we have out today. And, it took me a second to get there. It took me a second to get to a place where I was like, this dude is next level. But there is just such a freedom in his work. I find that he just doesn't, he kind of reminds me of it's so funny, I was going to say Heath Ledger, or even like a younger Brad Pitt, when Brad Pitt was trying so hard not to be just the pretty boy and like, you know, was doing like the 12 monkeys of it all and, you know, and like, and would pull out of Legends of the Fall and then would jump right back into, you know, a Fight Club. Like it's that search to be like, yes, I know I'm a very beautiful person, but like, let me act. I'm not just here to be like eye candy. Let me act. And, you know, this performance that he gives in Nightcrawler is, I mean, it's his Travis Bickle. And that was said when
it absolutely is the correlation.
It's
Taxi Driver. I mean, this movie is Taxi Driver, which has a similar, tone. Except in Taxi Driver, he redeems himself to an extent, right? There is that, like, he does a little bit of good. This guy, there's no good. And by the end, he's even worse because you realize how settled he is, how comfortable he is in what he's doing. So I mean, in terms of approaching it like a new job movie,
That's what I want. Put it in conversation for me.
Yeah, what's always interested me about this film is that ethos that I was talking about, is that mindset, because there's so many, especially this day and age, where people don't know why they're working, right? Like, we've built a culture where you have to go to school and then you have to get a job. But like, before in the history of humanity, the work you did directly contributed to survival. Yeah. Right? It was like, you go farm, you go bank, you go even things like banking, even things like entertainment, all of that. Like, it was more geared towards smaller set communities. Now, because we have access to the entire world, working is so confusing. Like, you need money to survive, but especially in America, how are you supposed to get there? So there's a $1 billion industry built around these books and motivational things to try to put you in the mindset of yes, working. You need to be working harder. You need to be working smarter. You need to be working longer. You need to be working shorter. You need to go do this and that and build passive income and active income. And you need to, like, there's so many things that like completely shroud the simple chaos that is like the world working system.
Yes.
And every country does it a little bit differently, but now we've gotten to this point where like we've lost perspective on it, which kind of draws in a lot, right? Like, the minimum wage hasn't changed in 20, 30 years, but the cost of everything has gone up. Like, we've been fighting for a minimum wage increase to a point where now that doesn't even cover what it's supposed to anymore. And we're still fighting for it. So like we've lost sight of what it is. So what I love about this character is that he is he reveals the stupidity in that. He reveals the craziness of this mindset of get up and grind.
When am I gonna get my raise? That's reasonable, right? You keep talking about this performance review. When's it gonna happen? I've been out here 2 months already, busting my ass every night. I'm tired of your promises for more pay, man. I'm sleeping in a garage.
Rick, trying to leverage your salary in this economic environment is near impossible. Most firms have set starting wages. Ideally, you could leverage with other offers, but that's just not the case in your situation right now.
Right? Of every waking second should be about, how can I go kick ass? How can I go do better than the other person? How can I get mine by working harder and working smarter and working all that? Because he's somebody who's doing that. He's living that and failing miserably. And the only way that he can transform that water into wine... Right, he can take that energy and apply it to something is by being scum, is by going and filming these people dying in car crashes and setting up, like, by the end of the movie, he's setting up.
Yeah, he's pulling
bad events. He's like pulling strings so that he can get the footage, letting his friend/employee, you know, literally get shot so that he can rise a little bit higher. And I think it's so. And I mean, as a freelancer, I feel like I look at working life from the outside in, because I don't have that normal 9-to-5, but it reveals to me the absurdity of it.
Yes. Yes, it does. It certainly acts as vicious commentary, almost satire. I mean, would you call it satire? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would call it dark comedy satire for sure.
It certainly falls. It falls in that category where it's just really trying to make you look at it. What I will say though, because I, again, going back to my examples, I consider Wolf of Wall Street satire. I consider all these things, right? You are letting these systems and people who love these systems play out to their inevitable conclusions. And I think what Nightcrawler is incredibly successful at is, like you said, showing us the logical conclusion of a person like this. My question to you though is, as a first day on the job movie, you know, do you find that with Nightcrawler, you're yes, he is jumping, like he gets a new job and he's like, I'm gonna be the best at it, but is it, I don't know, I have always thought, like, it's got to be, I'm about to answer my own question. I was about to say, it's got to be somebody coming into a larger world. There's such a motor on this guy. There is no question to me, not that this person from the beginning of the movie won't do the disastrous things. Do you know what I mean? That he's going to do, and that
absolutely,
that's the element that's missing a little bit for me as a, you know, where I guess my question to you, without ruining the movie for anybody, where do you think the point is where he passes the threshold, right?
Here's who Lou is, right? Is, like I said, he's somebody who has this mindset. He's somebody who's committed himself to doing stuff and can't do it. The only time you see him doing anything is stealing.
Yep.
He's a thief and he's very committed to it, but that's kind of on his own terms. And it's what you do when you can't get a job doing something else. It's not because he doesn't want a job. He literally, the guy he sells his stolen goods to, he asks him for a job. Yes. He says, I'll work for you. I'll work really hard for you. Like, I can start tomorrow. Like, it's not that he doesn't want to partake in the system. It's that he is completely outside of it. So when it's because he hasn't found something that fits. Like, there is no job that he could do. Yep. Besides this one, right? And he lives in a world, and the guy he hires, right? He brings the guy in, and the guy he hires, who's played by Riz Ahmed, who's great.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. Tells him in the interview, like, I worked as a landscaper for a week, you know, week here, week there. I've never really been employed, but I'll work hard for you. And he hires him. Like, I think he sees a little bit of himself in it or something. So I think the transition is the first time he sees that this is a possible thing, right? He pulls up Bill Paxton, God rest his soul. Is his competition, right? Yep. He's the guy he like de facto learns from. They're rivals, but he shows up to a crime scene randomly and sees a guy filming, asks him what he's doing. He's more interested in how this job is working, mm-hmm. realizes you can make money doing this stuff, and immediately sets about. He like steals a bike and goes and sells it to buy a camera from a pawn shop, and then goes and he builds his arse. You know, first it's a shitty camera, and then he gets a better one, and then he hires help, and he does everything you should do for a small business, right? So it's this moment of realization that he has that, like, if he has to survive of his own accord and he's too nuts for anybody to hire him for anything else, here is something where every ounce of sweat you put into it will come back if you're willing to do it. And that's his whole thing. Nobody's willing to do the actual work. No one's actually willing to do what it takes to get it done. So I completely disagree with your assessment for those reasons, respectfully.
No. I'm not saying that's why I asked, because I'm not saying, to be fair, I'm not saying it's not a first day on the job movie. I'm just saying you answered it. What is that moment of threshold? Because that's it's for me, the key element of a first day on the job movie is the character steps into a larger world and makes the decision to do so.
Yeah, but absolutely, that's what it is. I mean, that's the sunshine. That's you step through the door and you see what you've gotten yourself into.
Yeah.
And then you run with it, right? And you deal with the consequences of it.
Yep.
You make your mistakes, you try to grow, you push back, and by the end you're in a better place than when you started. And that's what I'm saying about the structure of it too, right? The story structure and the emotional structure of it. It follows all of that.
Oh no,
it's just those plot points are completely demonic.
Yeah.
And you know, his barometer of success is skewed.
No, it is. But and to be fair, I think that once you from the opening, now thinking back, it's been a minute since I've watched it, but now thinking back, the opening shots, I mean, everything about it tells you that you are in a world that black is white, up is down. Do you know what I mean? Like, you are not dealing with, we're not even going to try to deal with morality. Do you know what I mean? Like, we are truly just going with this guy on what he's trying to achieve. And these things, and it's so funny because one of my favorite shows, I won't say which, well, I guess I can say which because it doesn't ruin anything, but the fifth season of The Wire actually deals in a very similar thing. Have you finished it yet?
I literally, after we had our conversation months ago about how I need to finish it, I can't get past the second season for some reason.
God damn, dude. You gotta.
I think because Eminem won't watch it with me, so I watch it on my own, and then it's hard to consistently watch on my own, so I lose it after a while.
I get you.
I really need to get in there.
Without ruining anything, there is a very similar setup that happens, because the fifth season is all about journalism, right? It's about the journalism as an industry and what it means to be a working class journalist and all these things. So read into that what you will about how it connects to Nightcrawler, but it was almost like it almost becomes a meta commentary for the show, because it deals in sensationalism and making up stories, and the idea that in a society which is built on producing work and being the best in all these things that Lou holds so dear, there is almost no choice for a newspaper, for an individual journalist, for a policeman to not try to do something sensationalistic, if only yep. to be noticed. Because when you have this kind of, you know, reward-based society, it kind of fucks you in that way. So, it is absolutely an American story and a story of somebody going. Yeah,
the most fascinating thing I think about this movie is I mean, the character obviously is fascinating, but it's his interactions with everybody else and seeing yes. how, you know, they present him as somebody who is inevitably blown off all the time, right? He gets ignored and people just don't want to deal with the intensity. They don't want to deal with him. Yeah. And watching once he's in a place where he can really execute, again, literally and figuratively, he sucks these people in, right? The lady, the producer at the news station who he sells to, played by Renee Russo, you know, she starts off as kind of just this like, okay, like sell me what you got. Okay, this is great. If you can bring me some more, whatever. By the end of the movie, he's pulled her into this thing. He starts a relationship with her, negotiated on getting her more footage, which she's not the kind of person to do that until he's actually gotten under her skin. He says,
there are certain good things about being alone. You have time to do the things you want to do, like study and plan, but you can't have dinners like this or be physical with a person, I mean, outside of flirtationship.
Where are you going with this?
I want that. With you. Like you want to keep your job and your health insurance.
Look, just for starters, I don't need you to keep my fucking job.
You're the news director on the vampire shift of the lowest rated station in Los Angeles. We have what could be considered an almost exclusive relationship. There are many other places I could go. I have to think that you are invested in this transaction.
Here you are. I've done enough research on you to know that you are not somebody who can sacrifice what I'm willing to give, and all what I want in return is this. Which is like a personal relationship. Exactly. And she says that's crazy until he doesn't relent and she realizes that he's absolutely right. And he does this to a bunch of people and it's I don't know. It's creepy and it's scary, but it's watching somebody work. He's working. It's I don't know. It's crazy.
It really is. And yeah, you got me thinking about all the people. Riz Ahmed is truly wonderful in this film and heartbreaking. Yeah, there's so much that goes down.
There's a lot.
Yeah, good pick. I'll give it to you. It's a good pick.
I think it's a good pick. I understand your reticence about it, but I think especially if you went back and watched it in the guise of a new job. I mean, it's about somebody who is constantly looking for a new job. Like literally he starts the movie looking for a job and this is the job that he finds. Like he finds. It is.
It's true. Yeah, no, it 100% is about that. Yeah, man. All right. Nightcrawler. So I had a couple of thoughts in my head. There's a couple of ways that I was going to go with this. And, there was a dark thought. There was a world where a talented Mr. Ripley came into this. And because that is very much about somebody who, you know, takes on a new persona, but it wasn't exactly a job.
Because my mind immediately went to a detective movie, right? Like an Insomnia or something where it's about the new case as a new job. That's where my mind originally went.
Actually the one that I was going to do, until I really thought about it and was like, ooh, no, I want to do something a little more fun than that. It's kind of a detective story in that, Men in Black. That was where
that would have been
great.
Spot on. That's spot on.
And I was like, oh yeah, he's. I mean, it's you know. But
absolutely.
As I was thinking about it, though, you know, I think that because I love Men in Black, the first Men in Black, it's fucking hilarious. If there's one narrative weakness that I actually wanted to bring it up to you and talk to, and I'm, you know, let's talk about it before I bring my actual choice up.
We got time.
we have plenty of time. What is it that, you know, Lieutenant Edwards, John Edwards, Agent J, needs that okay, if we're plotting this out, story structure, Joseph Campbell, you know, story circle, right?
Why him?
What does the open, you know, bringing him into the unfamiliar world of aliens and all this stuff, how does that fulfill the character's need other than or put them in a, like, you, do you know what I mean? Like, what is, what, because like I was thinking back to it and I was like, okay, so we know he's a cop, we know that he is not, like, we get the sense he's not taking seriously his job,
mm-hmm.
but like, what about, like, is what it drives just him? Yeah, what drive, is it just like he doesn't have, like, is he just lost? I mean,
did you see how fast he could run?
Yes, I saw.
They've never
found that. No, we know why.
I'm trying to think of it, and I can't think of the name.
He ran down that cephalopod.
That's the only thing. He ran down the cephalopod, was it. That was the whole reasoning.
Well, and
totally botched the test, but outran the cephalopod. So
you know what? That actually answered my question, because I'm just now realizing the lead character of that movie is not Will Smith. It's Tommy Lee Jones. That thing, because
he's got a hell of a story in that.
He's got a ton. It's you need to find a replacement, and so you're looking, and so you engage with this person who is, you know, not like your usual replacement, not your usual men in black.
And because he's an old white man, he sees a fast black guy and says, "Well, that must be the guy.
That's the guy. New next case." It was gonna be Men in Black. And then there was also, I'm taking you on the long and winding path.
Yeah, please walk me through your work.
There was also a world where I was like, do I break with tradition and do an episode of a TV show? And I couldn't bring myself to do it.
I did that for Star Trek one time, right? Bring an episode of Star Trek in? What episode did I do? The pilot of Star Trek Next Generation, didn't I?
Oh, you did. You absolutely said yes. Space Final Frontier. Yep. I could have done this. It would have been the West Wing, Two Cathedrals.
We need to start a whole new podcast if you want to talk about the West Wing.
Oh, dude. I mean, the West Wing Weekly is one of my favorite.
If you have, there is a West Wing podcast, but there needs to be a Nick Walker talks about the West Wing.
Oh, my God.
Not even about the actual content, just how much you love watching the West Wing.
I watched an episode to fall asleep to last night, and it was the first thing I watched this morning before the inauguration, and
I bet you did. See, I fell asleep to Star Trek last night.
That makes sense. It tracks. But then I was like, no, let me do something that I really, really like, that is like new job and strangely, sadly, has all to do with this, what has happened today, this inauguration, a very cathartic look. And you know exactly what this movie is. You know exactly. I'm gonna describe the first shot to you, and you're gonna know exactly what it is.
I won't. Watch, yes, I won't.
We open with title cards, yellow writing on black, and that should tell you everything right now, by the way. We open. I can't even tell you. It's so hard. I can't even tell you what the actual title card says, because it will tell you exactly what the movie is. So I'm not even going to tell you what the opening title. There's an opening title card that like sets up the scene. I'll say that. You open on a beautiful French farm.
Yep. Okay.
There's a man chopping wood. Yep. Want to say it?
It is Inglourious Basterds.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Are you aware of the nickname the people of France have given me?
I have no interest in such things.
But you're aware of what they call me?
I'm aware.
What are you aware of?
Yeah, they call you the Juanter.
Precisely.
Glorious Bastards. Quentin Tarantino. Okay. All right. Let me digest for a second. Let me run through this movie in my head.
Sit with it. because
yes,
it is people. Yes. So again, a movie that is being told from various vantage points, right? You have the story of Hans Landa, right? Who is you know, being assigned to a new, it's actually funny because everybody in the movie has a new job at the start of the movie. Hans Landa right. has been tasked with going around and rounding up all the Jews left in France. And he was an SS officer. Now he is like been given this title of like almost like investigator or, you know, whatever. And then you have the bastards themselves led by Lieutenant Aldo Raine, Brad Pitt, in a crazy performance. Which you're like, I don't know if you're trying to be like John Wayne or like what you're doing, but it's nuts. You just look nuts. Where he has recruited these soldiers to go around scalping Nazis. And then you have, Shoshana, who, after this first run in this first scene, which we'll talk about, she is a Jew who is in hiding and she has a new job. Working at her, what she says is her uncle and aunt's cinema in Germany, in Nazi Germany, but it is really more for her to it's like a cover. She just yeah. like her hideout so that they don't ever suspect her or look into her. But this movie is literally about coming in and killing Nazis. And like that's the movie.
My name is Lieutenant Aldo Raine, and I'm putting together a special team, and I need me 8 soldiers. 8 Jewish American soldiers. Now, y'all might have heard rumors about the Armada happening soon. Well, we'll be leaving a little earlier. We're gonna be dropped into France dressed as civilians. Once we're in enemy territory, as a bushwhacking guerrilla army, we're gonna be doing one thing and one thing only. Killing Nazis.
That's the setup. Like it's just that, and I just loved the idea of.
Are they going to be cruel to the German?
You will be cruel to the German, and the German will know your cruelty by your booty.
I remember being because this movie came out while we were in college.
It was our senior year. Our senior year.
There is nothing more film school than like this is like the first. I would say this is the first movie of the second generation or third generation even of Quentin Tarantino. Right, he's like reached this status where he's done his Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs and Jackie Brown, and then he's done Kill Bill and kind of evolved a little bit, and then this is like this is the first time he's done like a genre film, right? Yes. Like a real hard genre film, and so I remember watching this trailer 1,000 times.
It was right at that start of people picking apart things on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. Like film essayists and all this stuff. So like people were breaking down this trailer like nobody's business. And it was, you know, I mean, truly it was one of those, you know, it started a new era for him of revenge films. You know, cause after this comes Django, after that comes Hateful Eight, which, you know, Hateful Eight was supposed to be the sequel to Django. But I would even say in a lot of ways, that's a revenge film. That's a very much a kind of an American satire. And then on top, and then we have the latest, which is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is absolutely a revenge film and a revenge fantasy. I mean, he's always dabbled in revenge, but this was like his historical revenge period.
And I mean, the way it had ended too, like it seems obvious now, like it doesn't seem out of the ordinary that Tarantino would do something like that, and he repeated the trick in Once Upon a Time, right? Yes. with the ending. If you haven't seen Inglourious Basterds by now, shame on you. But he killed Hitler, right?
Shot
like brutally tore him apart with a machine gun, because you're expecting, okay, like Hitler survived, so actually this whole plot to like get into this theater and kill Hitler, it can't work because Hitler didn't die that way, we know that historically. And then, you know, he subverted it same way he did with Charlie Manson.
He murders the fuck. I mean, literally, guys, it's that killing of Hitler and Goebbels and Bormann. It's
beautiful.
It's truly
like as a movie, it gives you this excuse to just erupt in triumphant. I remember the movie theater just losing God. It.
It's insane.
It's a fantasy you have. Like if you got a time machine, everyone's first thing they do with a time machine is go back and kill Hitler.
Kill right, like that. The fuck out of him.
Solve a lot of problems. Save a lot of lives.
Oh my god.
So it was cathartic to see that. Let me ask you this.
Please.
In terms of a new job movie.
Yes.
As I'm thinking about it, this film really, yes, everyone is, there is a new mission, right? If you look at a mission as a job.
Yes.
Alexander, yes, has a new job that he's executing. My thing about a new job is there's got to be some kind of learning curve.
Yes.
Right? There's got to be some kind of... I feel like these guys come in and everybody comes in and does their job the best that they know how without really much drawback up until the conclusion, right? So they're more following orders.
Yes.
Faithful.
This gets us to the major flaw of this film. And it's so funny because did you ever think there would be a day when I would say Tarantino and flaw in the same sentence?
I did not.
And you are hearing, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it here first. And I say this again as somebody who... truly, you know, the only person who loves Tarantino more than me is my wife. She loves it. That is, Tarantino is, I mean, her everything. And I love him to death. I love his work to death. But this film does fall a little short for me. It's just not my favorite. And why it's not my favorite is because there is nobody he fixes it going forward. It's really the only film that he does this. None of these characters have a full arc, right? The emotional trajectory of failing at something and then getting better is placed on one character. There's one character who fails so that you can, and it feels like they have failed, but really they didn't fail. Do you mean like it's Michael Fassbender's character makes a mistake and it gets him killed, and he is literally introduced to make a mistake. Do you mean like he's not, we meet him and then we see the scene in which he makes a mistake and then he comes out of it, or he dies. And, you know, and Hans Landa kind of goes forth without doing that. You know, you could say Shoshana has an arc, but like,
I mean, no. I would say it's her move in terms of an emotional core. I mean, she's the string, right? Like she's the one we follow. She gives the purpose.
Yes.
She gives the human purpose behind it. And so it's not just, you know, Americans killing Nazis, which is satisfying to watch for sure. But you kind of need a little more than that. And, I, in the script, they even say when Brad Pitt is first introduced, he's got that big scar across his neck, right? Yep. Like he's like someone tried to slit his neck. And he's like, he has a big scar across the front of his neck. It will never be discussed
ever.
So like he builds in this idea that the backstory should be obvious, right? Every character here, and it's World War II, and it's a very black and white, good and evil sort of thing, especially like in historical zeitgeist. Like, you know why everyone is here and why they're doing what they're doing already, so it almost doesn't matter.
Yes.
But it does leave a little bit lacking, for sure.
It does. I think it was a moment watching, especially coming off of the Kill Bill duology. It's not a trilogy, it's a two movies that really are one movie, the whole bloody affair. You watch this woman literally dig herself out of a grave and come and like attack and fail and succeed and fail again, right? And succeed. You watch her like struggle tooth and nail to get her daughter back. And it is so satisfying when she finally does, because you know, when she's on the bath, I have that image. I'll never let it go to my head. Or let go out of my head is that image of her on the bathroom floor crying that next day. And you just see that she's been through so much to get her daughter back. And you just feel so good for her. But with this movie, it just feels disparate. And it just feels like a lot of very cool characters circling the wagons to eventually kill Nazis. And
yeah.
And I love that. I love it. I think it's great. I'm like, oh yeah, let's have a bunch of cool characters. You know, even, I mean, Hans Landa, that first scene with Hans Landa is literally...
legendary. I mean, it's one of the great monologues
of all time.
Scenes
of and
film history.
Yeah. It really, if you haven't seen this movie, so the first scene with Hans Landa is, it's just a perfect encapsulation of what Tarantino does best. Hans Landa, played by Christoph Waltz, shows up at this farm, and he is talking to this farmer, and it seems like they're having a nice conversation. And Hans Land is telling him, you know, I'm just looking for Jews in the area. I know that we hit your house already. I'm just going, you know, whenever there's a new administration, we always got to go back over things and double the efforts and whatever. I'll be out of here in 2 seconds. And they're having this like conversation, and in that very Tarantino way, just talking about everything, like literally, you know, whatever that comes to their mind, they just talk about. And you're kind of unsure, you know, there's a power struggle going on, but you're not sure why it's happening until that camera pans down into the floorboards. And you see that underneath the floorboards of this farm are like 10 Jewish refugees hiding out. So now all of a sudden in the middle of the scene, this scene becomes about this farmer trying to protect these mm-hmm. people under his floorboards. And it's just the tension of this scene. It's exactly like you said, Alex, it's masterful. But to your point, it is the movie is just moments. It doesn't ever feel like you get to, there's a character that you care about that you can follow all the way through. It does feel disparate, and I think that is its biggest flaw. But in terms of a movie that is about people starting a new mission, new job, and doing away with goddamn racist Nazis.
Well, that's where it really fits into this whole, if we're equating it to new job being like new administration, then yes, a movie about a group of people coming to kill the Nazis that we already know are dead in a whole new way.
Yep.
Right. Cause it kind of like with that ending, rewriting history, it's not that whole world then is not the world that we know. So it gives you a whole fresh chance to kill the Nazis all over again.
Kill them all,
right?
Over.
And it's which we've you know had the chance to do. Now we get to identify and attack Nazis again. So,
well, and it's interesting to me, right? Because you know Django, which you know follows this 3 years later, comes out, and he doesn't use I think he learns, it seems like he learns something from Inglourious Basterds, because Django is not about taking down the institution of slavery. It is a revenge fantasy that happens within the world of slavery. So this specific slave plantation gets destroyed, and you get the sense that he's going to go around and do some more damage. And, you know, and, you know, subtle nod that eventually his great, great, great grandson is, you know, John Shaft of the Shaft films.
What?
Oh,
is that real?
Oh yeah, dude. Kerry Washington's character's name Broomhilde von Shaft. That's the point.
I had no idea there was any kind of connection to Shaft.
Shaft. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's Shaft, baby.
I guess Django was sort of the same era, huh?
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think that you mean Django, like the original Django, movie? The original Django, yeah.
Yeah.
It was. Yes, it was.
Wasn't a blaxploitation movie, but it was in that same
era. But I think that is what is so interesting, is that here he like literally decimates the Nazi machine and kind of goes, it's almost like he goes too wide. And then with Django, he says, I'm not trying, you know, slavery still happened in Tarantino world, but this guy was at least able to cause some fucking ruckus and light some fires, and that was awesome. So, you know, I love it. I really do. You know, Inglourious Basterds, it's not his best. It is a fun watch. It's also, I think Inglourious was the first movie, maybe I'm wrong, where he lost Sally Menke, who was his editor. And
no, that happened after, I think.
Did she do Inglourious?
She died in 2010. I think that was
it's also the movie.
No, she did Inglourious.
She
that
did
was
it.
Her last film.
That was
yeah,
her last.
She did
okay.
it.
Okay.
Death Proof, Inglourious, and then she did a film called Peacock, and then she passed.
What an amazing editor. But you know, it's from there that you know his movies start to
fun fact, drag. She's married to the director of Galaxy Quest.
Oh wow. Look at that. Full circle.
Full circle.
Yeah, I love Inglourious. I was going to say it feels like we're getting with Inglourious into like the Tarantino. It's a little too long. It's just too long.
It's too long. It was exciting for the time. I think it goes back to like when it was released, like it was really good, but it's episodic, like almost to the scene. You can tell you had a lot of fun writing it.
Yes.
Because I think it gave him an opportunity to break out of his box, right? He got to make a World War II movie, like somebody who's seen every World War II movie ever. He got to go do On the Wings of an Eagle or whatever that movie, you know, all these classic World War II movies. Dirty Dozen. Yeah, exactly. He got to put it in his own thing.
It behooves oneself to keep his wits. Long story short, we hear a story too good to be true. It ain't.
Sitting in your chair would probably say the same thing. And 999.999 times out of a million, you would be correct. But in the pages of history, every once in a while, fate reaches out and extends its hand. What shall the history books read?
Yeah. And again, like some brilliant sequences, but they are sequences. And as a full movie, doesn't quite come together the way the rest of it does, but in terms of what we're talking about today.
So here's Nick Walker shitting on my choice, saying, I don't know, your film's not really a new job. Like, why would you pick this thing? And then it gets to your choice, and you're like, it's not really about a new job, and it's not really the best.
I didn't say that your thing wasn't about a new job. I said your movie's not hopeful. Your movie makes me feel like shit.
This isn't the Biden movie. This is the new job movie.
The new job movie. Well, the new job. I hope we're gonna.
What was the first one? Men in Black. I think that would have been.
That would have been the one.
That would have been clean.
Well, let's find another clean one for Men in Black. Another clean entry point. We'll bring that back. Yeah. But
let us know, all you guys out there, what your choice is. If Nick is wrong, or if I am right.
Don't tell me if I'm wrong. Let me believe it.
But go watch Nightcrawler.
Yeah, go watch Nightcrawler. My God, I just hit puberty. Go watch Nightcrawler. Let us know what you think, and get at us, and welcome to the new presidency. Let's see what this brings. Let's keep working, guys. And
welcome back, America.
Welcome back. The fuck back. All right, guys, stay safe out there.
Little justice, little justice, little justice.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.